So Chazal darshin that Yishri is Yom Kippur, because we're in a state of peril, we're in a state of danger, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu rescues us, Yeshua. So Chazal felt that the word Yishri is a reference to our expectation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intervention and rescue in Yom Kippur. But what about Ori? What does that refer to? So Chazal say that David Hashem Ori is Rosh Hashanah. Why is Ori Rosh Hashanah? I understand why Yishi, according to that matter, is Yom Kippur, but why is Ori Rosh Hashanah? So, that demands understanding the difference between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and I'd like you to shift into Rosh Hashanah mode. One of the dangers that people face is that they collapse Rosh Hashanah into Yom Kippur, and Rosh Hashanah becomes just part of the Yom Kippur experience, and it really isn't. Rosh Hashanah is the day Hashem created the world. Rosh Hashanah is a day that the entire universe is recreated every year. Rosh Hashanah is a day of Hashem's glory. Rosh Hashanah is not for Jews, it's for the entire world, it's also for Jews. I'll talk about this a little bit tonight. Rosh Hashanah is a day of Hashem's malchus. Rosh Hashanah is a preview or promo for what Milos Mashiach will be like. Rosh Hashanah is a day of light, as opposed to Yom Kippur, which is a day of darkness. And that itself is an interesting question. Is tshuva dark or is tshuva light? Like, how do you think about tshuva? But David HaMelech certainly thinks about tshuva as dark. And Lamed Ches, and I keep encouraging you to read part of Lamed Ches, David HaMelech says, I'm stuck in darkness, I'm shrouded in darkness, I can't see. Dark means you're depressed, dark means you feel frustrated, dark means you feel dysfunctional, dark means you feel ashamed. Well, you know what you associate with dark. You don't know, you're not confident in yourself. So there may be an element of light in tshuva, and certainly at the end of tshuva you should feel light. And certainly if you ask Rav Kook about tshuva, he would say, well, it's more light than it is darkness, and that's why his sefer on tshuva is Arota Tshuva. But his tshuva was a very, very, very different tshuva than the one we're accustomed to. Maybe one time we'll talk about Rav Kook's tshuva, but it's not the standard Cheshbon HaNefesh and Bidur and Charata. But typically tshuva is a dark experience, and it's good to be dark. It's good to go down to a place where you can face your flaws and be so frustrated by it that you feel darkened or depressed or pessimistic, or not long-term depression, but frustrated and angry and dark and lost and things aren't working well. When's the last time you felt, I don't mean dark in a way that you wanted to hurt someone, and that's the dark part, just you felt, I'm not happy, I'm not satisfied with where I am. But Rosh Hashanah is a day of light. That's why Chazal say, L'davar Hashem, Ori, V'yishi, Ori is Rosh Hashanah. That is a day to expose yourself to Malchus Hashem, to think about Yemos HaMashiach, to think about what this world was meant to be, to think about a fallen world this year, to get out of your own small Dalet Amos. Yom Kippur is taking Hashem into a very small place in your heart and trying to build that relationship afresh. Rosh Hashanah means stepping out of yourself and being an Eved Hashem and understanding Malchus Hashem in a broader sense. It's panoramic, it's cosmic, it's large. So I very rarely do this, everyone, but this is one of the only times this year I'm going to do that. You must come to my chug tonight. I don't plug my own chugim, but tonight I'm giving a chug of the Pesukim of Rosh Hashanah, and trust me, I've given this chug for 15, 20 years, and everyone says it's a game changer. So it really, really will change your Rosh Hashanah. So I want to start today with David Hashem Ori V'yishi. And there are three Pesukim that you'll say on Rosh Hashanah. I'm trying to give you the Pesukim that will be in your head already. It's in Tehillim, Perek Pei Zion, I think. Ashrei ha'am yodei surah. These are the three psukim we say right before Tkiyah Shofar. Ashrei ha'am yodei surah. Hashem bi'or panacha yalechon. Hashem bi'or panacha yalechon. We're about to blow the shofar. We're about to stand in front of your light. B'shimcha yigilon kol hayom. I want to be happy with you every day of my life. With your justice, I will rise. So these are very ascendant psukim. These are very affirmative psukim. I want to be in a Kaddish Baruch Hu's light. So Rosh Hashanah is not the day of tshuva. You think a little bit, the Rav used to say, it's hero tshuva, but it's certainly not the day for methodical, point-by-point, dissecting, introspective tshuva. Because then you lose the Malchus Hashem. You can get so caught up in your own little world that you're not thinking about the Kadosh Baruch Hu's broader world. The Pesukim we say in the beginning of Slichos, Mi Yid Melech, Mi Arach Lach, who is like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yid Melech Shemif Ne'elim, nothing can compare to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's part of the reason Chazal felt that Ori refers to Rosh Hashanah as opposed to Yishi, which Chazal interpreted as a reference to Yom Kippur. Now there's an old Musar Vart that they're not separate. Why don't we perform Tshuva on Rosh Hashanah? So part of it is we don't want to get distracted by Tshuva on Hashem's Malchus. part of it is, and the Bali Musar said, that until you have the Or of Hashem illuminating yourself, you can't perform tshuva because you're still in denial. Like, we're all still in denial. How deeply have we dug over the last month? How much of ourselves are we facing? How much of ourselves are we fleeing? Good question. What's the percentages? Well, they're not more than 50%. We're still struggling to get that 50% threshold of how deeply we're engaged. What's going to shake us up? What's going to change that? How are we going to get more deeply into Yom Kippur, into tshuva? Part of it is if you don't sleep for a couple of days and you're shook enough, so get ready. So it's going to be 6:15 during a series of tshuva. So if you think 6:30 is an early start, get ready for the 6:15 start. But part of it is when you get exposed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and something larger than yourself and something beyond yourself and something eternal and something cosmic and something, so it's a perspective changer. So much of life is seeing the world large and seeing it whole, not just living. So much of historical dislocation. I think people in America sometimes live with historical dislocation because you're just so grounded in such a deeply resourced environment. There's so much of the narrative that you have. And you don't realize it. I think people that live in South Africa, people that live in Australia, people that live in Europe, they have less. They have much, much less than you have. So by nature, they're more connected to Israel. You walk into a supermarket in England, half the food there is from Israel. There's not enough kosher food in England, enough kosher food in Australia. So you realize you're just in a way station. You realize there's some historical process that's larger than you and you're a part of. And this is, and you know, I always, I'm sure you've seen the picture that's made its way on the internet yesterday of the Mincha Minyan on the White House lawn. Everyone's sharing it around. Europeans and South Africans, they're shocked by this. They don't get it. Like, you daven mincha in a public place, a government, your mincha in stadiums. In America, life is very, very proprietary. Jews really feel at home. They feel comfortable. Baruch Hashem, they feel comfortable in a home. But it's harder to get that sense of, well, where am I in the broader historical sweep? Where it's harder to get that sense. You're very much, let's say, trapped. I don't like to speak in harsh words, but it's harder to see beyond. When there's just so many resources, it's hard to see this is just the facade, this is just the mirage. Hopefully it'll last for a good long time. I'm not one of those people who wanted to fade, oh, it's a make Aliyah. I think Baruch Hashem, people are living meaningful lives as a voter of Hashem, but how do you get that historical, larger consciousness that it's not just about Walmart and sports, and how do you get beyond this? And Rosh Hashanah is trying to be a difference maker, to take your mind out and put yourself into a different place. And hopefully I'm going to try to stretch your minds tonight, so. Call me the mind stretcher. So I'm not a mind bender, a mind stretcher. It's a big difference between the two. I'm going to try to stretch your minds tonight, so see you at 6:15. Okay?
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
The added component that America has a different historical narrative. Meaning America sees itself as like also a messianic age.
Could be.
I'm not sure how many people in the modern world are still in tune to that messianic. Maybe Jews are.
I don't know.
Maybe Jews are a couple of social equality.
As an American, I felt tugged very, very strongly to the American messianic dream.
Yeah, but you're an idealist by nature, so you hook into ideals. I don't think most of America is in an idealist frequency right now. They're more in a materialistic frequency.
That's right.
But you are, for sure. And you know, maybe you'll wake up one day and you'll realize that, I don't mean wake up, as you say that, maybe we'll all wake up one day and realize that the entire American Revolution was just to fill the state of Israel.
That's
I just said that to provoke you.
No, I
don't think
it very
so.
Well be true.
I think they introduced an important value into the human mind, freedom and justice, and that a nation can stand for something, not just stand for personal interests and serve. The fact that in the last century they entered battles that basically shouldn't have entered. America shouldn't have entered World War II. And, you know, we have a moral responsibility to try to. It's really the first time the superpowers in the history of mankind have such a moral conscience. We have to, for sure.
Do you celebrate July 4th?
No, so it wouldn't be culturally appropriate. I celebrate it by writing an article every year about the dangers of democracy. And I think that if you deify any value, the greatest danger is democracy has been such a game changer for humanity to save so much persecution, and now it's held up as too much of a crime. Like, for example, I don't have an answer to this, but I'm just trying to provoke a question. The main question in Israel now is, can we be a Jewish state and a democratic state? Right. The simplest way to the solution would just be to just absorb 2 million Palestinians into the country, make it all one big country, and they'd love it. And Palestinians would like nothing better to be Israeli citizens. Their standard of living would rise exponentially. 80% of the Hamas were in, but 80% of the Palestinians didn't want it. Problem is, and they demographically, they'd outpace us, it'd just be either a contiguous state, because they would vote half the Knesset Palestinian. So, I don't know, I don't have an answer to that. But I know that the premise should be questioned, maybe we shouldn't have democracy.
But, like, someone who's, like, you know, rooted in American ideals, it's like, it's crazy.
Right. Although all the nations that we're making peace with now are all non-democratic, or partially democratic.
Right.
So in theory, you could have a democracy that has certain frameworks that demand that X amount of Jews, some ministers, whatever. So you wouldn't completely trash democracy. It wouldn't be totalitarian, but it wouldn't be a free, open-ended democracy where every vote counts equally. That's heresy. But it shouldn't be. Because there are many, many values. Like, you can't say that's the top value. It's a value, and we have to try to find ways that... I don't have an answer to that. I'm not blank all of a sudden. I find it amusing that that's a conversation stopper every time. You know, how can we be Jewish in a democracy? Well, maybe we should think about it. Yeah. Anyway. Look, the 20th century posed two major challenges to democracy. The basic premise was that democracy is too weak to harness all of its resources and provide a united front and beat. Totalitarian regimes can unite, can marshal resources and defeat. That was Hitler's gamble and that was Stalin's gamble.
And they lost.
They lost. And democracy was able... Now, I'm not sure if we still have that democracy because it's become too polarized. Democracy is not static. Democracy in the 20th century was able to militarize, and would we have that today? Are the modern democracies, at least in America, is it capable of creating that type of unity and response to a dictator? I don't know.
I wouldn't sleep on America.
It depends if Trump wins again. If Trump wins, and I'm not saying you could decide to vote. If you decide that America is less important than Israel, so I'm just saying, Trump is not healthy for America.
That's very true.
He could provide long-term damage to the democratic process, to the trust in government. It has to be trust. If you don't trust in the whole system,
the system is too deeply rooted, I think, to fall apart at this point. I don't know. Every system ever has said that.
Let's see. I'm sure. Commentus said that in Rome in 178.
Yeah, that's true.
Said in Latin. Have a good day, Moshe. What's up?
I was just listening.
We'll see.
Have a good day, Eddie.
Have a good day. Well, I'm sure. I'll take my son to the doctor at 11:30. Sure. Short share. We'll talk a little bit about how to judge Chazal and
stuff.
Okay. Short share, and tomorrow we'll talk about Shafar. Shafar, from this and Shafar. Okay, good morning, Moshe. Good morning.